Oh, yeah, taking you back to the fall of 1964. Manfred Mann riding the top of the charts. And in baseball, a terrific World Series between the St. Louis Cardinals and the New York Yankees, capping off a remarkable season when nearly half the teams in Major League Baseball finished within 5 games of first place. And to talk about that season, the pennant race, and the World Series, we're joined by our friend, baseball historian, author of Baseball in America, Jim Halloran. Jim, thanks for being with us again.
Thank you, Rich. It's always a pleasure to be on and talk a little baseball. And 1964 is an exciting year to talk about.
Boy, it sure is.
I think I can recall from our other conversations that you were probably roaming the earth in that year, but maybe not keeping up box scores and keeping statistics yet. Would that be right?
You are absolutely dead on. I would have been 6 years old then, I think it was the next season, the 65 season, when I first started paying a little bit of attention to baseball. But man, some great players and some great names, and really terrific pennant races in both leagues that year.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you about it. That doesn't happen that often, that we come down to the last weekend of the season with 4 teams challenging in the National League and 3 teams challenging the American League for the right to win the pennant. You got to remember, this is before the divisional play. So it was just down these 7 teams going into that last weekend. The Phillies, they had sat there on the top for a while. They were on 6.5 games ahead with 2 weeks remaining in the season. I imagine they were already thinking about sprinting the World Series ticket. No one counted on them dropping 10 in a row and opening up a frantic finish for 3 challengers. At the season's end, the Phillies, the Reds, and the Giants looked up to find, of great surprise, the Cardinals, who were in 5th place in mid-August. They were on top by 1 game over the Reds and Phillies, with the Giants just 3 games behind. One of the keys to that Cardinal team, and this is kind of an historic trade we've heard about for many years, they picked up future Hall of Famer outfielder Lou Brock from the Cubs in exchange for pitcher Ernie Broglio, who was really kind of a one-season flash in the pan. And Brock came over from the Cubs, and he batted .348 that season. And in addition to Brock, they picked up a 37-year-old veteran named Barney Schultz, who was kind of in the junkyard now of past glory. And Schultz came, and he saved 9 games during the stretch run. And you add to that, they had MVP third baseman Ken Boyer, first baseman Bill Wright, and great pitching from Bob Gibson and Ray Sadecki. And it was just enough for them to squeeze in there and grab the fence. The rejuvenated Phillies ran out of gas. Despite they had good seasons, outfielder Bobby Callison and rookie of the year Dick Allen and pitcher Jim Bunny, who came over from the Detroit in a lopsided trade, provided a lot of the talent. And let me mention briefly this guy, Dick Allen. He was a controversial player. But that rookie year, he batted .318 with 29 home runs. And for the next 8-9 years, he was Hall of Fame material.
Mm.
But he kept running into problems. He got sidetracked. He had attitude problems. He was fighting with teammates and opponents. He got suspended a few times. And I really think that kept him possibly being in the Hall of Fame. He was that good.
Oh, I agree with you completely.
The Reds also tied for the Phillies with 1 game back, and they were relying on future Hall of Famer Frank Robinson and Zeta Pinson. They were providing the power, and they had a young second baseman named Pete Rose, who added the hustle to the team. And so they tied for second, while the Giants, featuring Willie Mays and 47 home runs, Cepeda and third baseman Ray Hart each had 31 home runs, and they also had 21 game winner Juan Marichal. That kept them in hunt until the final weekend. Now, over in the American League, the Yankees, the powerful Yankees of the 50s and in the 60s, the armor was beginning to crack a little bit. The Yanks began the year with Yogi Berra assuming the field manager role and Ralph Houck being sent up to the general manager's office. Mid-August, down to one powerful Yanks, in third place behind Baltimore and Chicago. Sluggish play, and with very little discipline from Barrow. He was really just kind of one of the boys, but he was the manager. But all of a sudden, that changed when Barrow exploded in a full race. None of you heard this story of the object of Yogi's displeasure was the playful playing of harmonica by shortstop Phil Lynn on the bus trip following being swept in a three-game series. And the story goes is that Yogi yelled from the front of the bus, "Shut it down." Lynch says he did not hear what Yogi yelled, and he asked his buddy Mickey Mantle. And Mantle replied, he said, "Play it louder." So Lynch played it louder, Yogi exploded, and Mantle sat back in the back of the bus having a good laugh. But, you know, suddenly they woke up. Helped by the return of Mantle, he from an injury, but for the season, he batted .305 with 35 home runs, 114 RBIs. The call-up of pitcher Mel Stottlemyre from the minors, he won 9 games in a stretch run, and they made a late acquisition of a reliever, Pedro Ramos, to join pitchers Whitey Ford and Jim Belt. The Yanks posted a 22-6 record in September to clinch the pennant on the next to the last day of the season. The second-place White Sox mounted their challenge due to the strong pitching staff headed by Gary Peters. He was a 20-game winner, and future Hall of Famer Hoyt Wilhelm, who saved 27 games while winning 12. And power hitting of third-baseman Pete Ward and the speed of shortstop Hall of Famer Luis Aparicio, who had 57 steals that year. The third-place Orioles showed they belonged in the hunt, finishing 2 games back. Hall of Famer third baseman Brooks Robinson was the most valuable player that year. He batted .317, 28 home runs, 116 runs batted in. He was backed up by a 22-year-old first baseman, Boog Powell, who hit 39 home runs. But it was a great race. They had a lot of other stories going on throughout the rest of the leagues. In the National League, the Braves still had power from Aaron and Matthews and Rico Carty, but they lacked pitching. 43-year-old Warren Spahn could win only 6 games. The Dodgers, who had won the previous year, took a big setback despite still having Koufax and Drysdale due to poor hitting. Koufax, as we know, absolutely amazing. He was in the third of the 5-year stretch in which he was really nearly unbeatable. And despite the lack of offense on that team, he was 19-5 with an earned run average of 1.71.
Wow.
The Pirates had some promise. They were seventh place, but hey, Roberto Clemente won the batting title, and young Willie Stargell started showing some power. And the Cubs, actually got good production from outfielder Billy Williams and third baseman Ron Santo, but Ernie Banks is feeling his age. And now all of a sudden, the era of the Brock trade really sunk in, because pitcher Ernie Broglio could only win 4 games for that Cubs after the big trade. They have the Houston Colt 45 from the Mets. They played as expected, lousy. In the American League, the Tigers, they took a step forward. They now had first baseman Norm Cash, Hall of Fame Al Kaline, along with the pitcher Mickey Lawley. A 20-year-old kid named Denny McClain was sitting on the bench just getting started and used sparingly. 2 names stood out for the Angels for opposite reasons. Pitcher Dean Chance won the Cy Young Award by posting a 20-9 record with an earned run average of 1.85. But another member of the Angels got some headlines for the wrong reason. Playboy Bo Belinsky. Bo was the namest before there was a namest. He was a handsome guy, and he got off to a tremendously hot start. He won 6 of his first 7 games and threw a no-hitter on his 4th game out, automatically became a Hollywood Playboy celebrity. He had glamour girlfriends, included Anne Margaret, Connie Stevens, Mamie Van Doren. He married a Playmate of the Year. He had everything that named it that for a while. But it didn't last very long because he ended up with a 28-51 career record and was out after about 6 seasons. The reigning 63 Twins, the Stanton Twins, took a giant step backwards to seventh place, even though they still had Killebrew's 49 home runs. And they also had a rookie of the year, Tony Oliva. Do you remember Oliva?
I sure do. And he won the first of, what, six or seven batting titles that year.
Boy, if you go through this thing, his name keeps popping up under any statistics for a number of years. And, I'm surprised he's not in the Hall of Fame.
He should be there.
He had a lifetime average of .304. But that rookie year, he batted .323 with 32 home runs and 94 RBI. And as you know, after this year, the Twins got real good. And he played a vital part in the improvement of the Minnesota Twins in the years to come. The only excitement coming out of your area of Boston was the arrival of rookie outfielder, 19-year-old Tony Cabellero, who, despite having to sit down after 111 games with a broken arm, hit 24 home runs and batted .290.
And hit a home run on the first pitch he saw at Fenway Park.
So I know your Red Sox fans love Tony C, didn't they?
Absolutely. My favorite, might be my favorite player of all time.
Oh, really? I know that there was a lot of heartbreak when he got hurt, and that was a shame. He was going to be a great player, I think. You also had reliever Dick Raddatz back then.
That's right, the monster.
He led the league with 29 saves, and he won 16 games. That's a pretty good pitch. But they didn't come out so well in the standings.
No, but it was a wonderful season.
Yeah. And then the Sanders and the A's, same old story. They kept losing, even though the A's fans had something to cheer about because owner Charlie Finley came to town. And he pulled out all kinds of gimmicks like the green and gold uniforms, a mascot mule. He had a race between a player and a horse, and on and on. So he couldn't get the fans in to watch much baseball, but they liked his promotion. And then the end of the season, World Series, went the full seven games. Cardinals were led by the pitching of Bob Gibson, hitting of young catcher Tim McCarver at .470 in that series, and took the championship from the Birds. And that kind of gives a little wrap of 1964.
It was a memorable season, absolutely, and so much fun to reminisce. And for people who've enjoyed our conversations, we've talked about the 1951, the 67, and now the 64 seasons. And, Jim, you'd love to hear from people if they have any questions or want to read. You've put together these wonderful summaries that you're working on starting back in the 1950 season, and they can reach out to you, jim@baseballandamerica.com.
Yeah, drop me a note. And if you're interested in any of those years that we talked about on the show, I'll just send you up a more complete, because, of course, this is edited and summarized because you only have so much time. But it's been a fun thing. I'm starting in 1950, and if I can hold out till 2020, it will be quite an achievement, I think. So.
Excellent. Well, we'll do it.
Fingers crossed. I'll hang in there.
We'll do it again in a couple of weeks and pick out another memorable season from the last 70 years.
Okay, and how are you feeling about spring training starting in July?
Well, I've still got my doubts about whether we're actually going to see the whole thing happen. Fingers are crossed, but I'm not sure we can do it safely, which is why we love these opportunities to talk about old baseball that actually happened with you. Hey, Jim, we appreciate it. Thanks for joining us, as always. Have a wonderful Independence Day weekend, and we'll catch up with you again in a couple of weeks.
Thank you, Rich. Talk to you soon. Bye.
That's Jim Halloran, author of Baseball in America. And again, if you want more information, email him, Jim@baseballandamerica.com.